You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good day. See, it might be cold outside, but getting hot on set. Stephen A. Smith is here. Jay Will in the building. We're going to start with basketball, and Dan Orlovsky will be back in a minute. A lot of playoffs to discuss as well.
It's cold.
It's cold.
It's a little cold. It's snowing outside.
It's snowing outside.
It's hot in here, though.
That's why I have on a sweater dress, tights, and boots for the weather. Look at that.
It was a big sweater. That's why I was asking.
What are you talking about? First of all, it's a sweater dress.
Molly's doing it.
And it's periwinkle, the color of the...
Go ahead, Molly. Tell him. Tell this man.
I can't take him anywhere. Who let him out the house?
I got you. I'm here for you.
Thank you.
I'm here for you.
I'm only going to talk to you.
You want to talk to Jay Williams about wardrobe?
Oh, my. Can you stop? I can't even believe Jay came back.
I mean, I can hook her up with the money that you're going to owe me, so it works out.
With the two of you yesterday, I almost lost my voice again.
It's not over yet. Nick's still got a chance. Nick's still got a chance.
Can we start the show? No one cares about your sorry news.
I'm going to pray for you.
We begin with the Lake Show. Yes, you heard me. Yes, don't look at me. Which hasn't been living up to the purple and gold standards. Just ask Magic. During last night's loss to the Indiana Pacers, Coach Frank Vogel benched Russell Westbrook. For the last 3:52 of the game, Westbrook was under 30% beyond the arc. Here's Vogel.
Frank, you opted to go with Russ on the bench at the end of the game. What were you looking for there? What was the thinking behind that choice?
Yeah, playing the guys I thought were going to win the game.
How was Russ after the game? Is that the sort of thing that bothers him?
Have you followed Russ throughout his career?
Not as closely as you have, probably.
Okay. Have you followed Russ throughout this season?
Yeah.
Would you think that would bother Russ not being in the late game?
What had happened was, meanwhile, our Dave McMenamin is reporting that Lakers management told the coaching staff to coach Westbrook as they see fit, even if that means pulling him from the game. Jay, I'll start with you. Is Westbrook most to blame for the Lakers' struggles?
No. Now, look, there are two people that would be scapegoats here.
Okay.
I think Russ is one of them. Does his game fit in with LeBron James and with the cast of characters that they have assembled? No, it does not. That play last night where he got benched, he didn't give effort on the defensive end. Okay, but I'm not going to allow Russell Westbrook to be a scapegoat. He didn't bring himself to L.A. L.A. went and they got him. Frank Vogel, he's another scapegoat. This was a defensive-minded team 15 months ago when they won their first first NBA championship. Mm-hmm. They changed personnel. He's now trying to make this new cast of characters, which is an older group, by the way, mm-hmm. DeAndre Jordan, Kent Bazemore, Wayne Ellington, Kendrick Nunn, who's been injured, Trevor Ariza injured, Dwight Howard, Rajon Rondo.
Oldest
team in the NBA. He's trying to make them a defensive-minded team when that's not how they're actually built. I get so frustrated when we end up doubling down on Russell Westbrook or Frank Vogel. This is an organizational issue. There is not one damn voice, Stephen A. Who is making the right decisions here? Rob Pelinka and company, is that Rob Pelinka? Is that Rich Paul? LeBron James? Jenny Buss? Kurt Rambis, who's now sitting in coaches' meetings? What is going on? Why is there not one voice? Because Rob Pelinka and company are the ones that put together this cast of characters mm-hmm. that you're asking now, can it work? Mm-hmm. You need shooting around these guys. Mm-hmm. When you can't provide that around the style in which they play, mm-hmm. of course they're going to struggle, and they're horrible defensively.
This is a strange segment to start off the show, because I don't disagree with what you're saying at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a different perspective, and I want to throw this by you and listen to me break this down. I don't think it's Russell Westbrook's fault. Russell Westbrook is who he is. Frank Vogel is the head coach. I do have a problem with you being like 18th in defensive efficiency and 27th overall in points allowed per game because you're a head coach because of your defensive prowess. In other words, even though we look at the personnel and we know you don't have it, the objective of a coach is to figure it out. Mm-hmm. Because that's why you have the job.
Understood.
You know, you know that's why you have the job. We understand that, okay? So I can't completely absolve Frank Vogel while I'm not blaming him because I understand that the roster is old and I get that they're not built to be a defensive-minded team. You have to figure out a way for them to be better than 27th in points allowed and 18th in defense. You got to figure that out, Frank Vogel. Okay, now, here's where I tell you that although I'm not pointing a finger at Russ, if you Russell Westbrook, it's not a character issue. His effort is always there. He never cheats the game. Let's understand that. But having said all of that, if you're Russell Westbrook, I'm going to repeat something I said months ago. These are your teammates. Kevin Durant, James Harden, Serge Ibaka, Reggie Jackson, Victor Oladipo, Paul George, James Harden again, Bradley Beal, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis. And you don't have one single title to show for it. It's a legacy question because obviously this is the first season with LeBron and AD, and it's not over yet. And we get that, even though we don't see them winning the championship. What I'm saying is if you're Russell Westbrook, at some moment in time, you got to look at things through those lens. Because, bless you, because when we talk about the game of basketball, which obviously you are more than qualified to talk as far as I'm concerned, national champion, player of the year in college at Duke. You understand? You don't get injured in the damn accident. You're kicking behind in the NBA as far as I'm concerned. You're qualified. What I'm saying is when we talk about basketball, in the end, how are you not going to look at all of that? I'm not talking about you. I'm just talking about in general.
I understand.
Think about it because this ain't football now. Where you Tom Brady, you play offense, but you don't play defense, you don't play special teams. If you got two or three big-time players in basketball, you are formidable. You are in the picture. Mm-hmm. And somewhere, at some point in time, you're supposed to come over the hump. You're supposed to get over the hump. We are now at a point in time where Russell Westbrook, the only reason we would say he ain't getting traded is because of his salary. That the Lakers would give him away. We're wondering, he ain't even an all-star this year. He ain't going to an all-star game this year. Think about that. This is Russell Westbrook we're talking about here. He's not even an all-star this year. And so when we look at it from that perspective, and we're looking at the players he played against, at some point in time, everybody's going to look at that. Because you see, with LeBron, when you sit there and you see him being, and I don't mind Westbrook not talking to the media last night. I totally
LeBron
understand.
LeBron did it a couple nights ago with him.
But I totally understand because Russell Westbrook got benched. What you think he going to say if he was up at that microphone?
Nothing
It would have been bad.
Yes.
So I get all of that. I understand his, to me, it would have been good for him to go up there, but I totally understand him not going up there. But in the end, we're going to get to a point, if we're not there already, where we're seeing all these guys you played with, and not one championship to show for it, and now you're struggling, and people are going to look at him, man, and he's got to accept that.
I understand that. I just hate how that's becoming the narrative for him, especially this year.
Okay.
Because you look at that game when they came back against Utah. Do you know who was the squad on the court that came back against Utah when they were down double digits? Austin Reeves, Stanley Johnson, Malik Monk, Taylor Horton Tucker, and LeBron James at the five.
Right.
Shooting, Stephen A.
I agree.
Shooting around him. So the personnel that Rob Plankin and company put him with, it doesn't mesh
well. That's fair, Jay, but here's the flip side, because we got to be honest here. We know, and I don't say, I'm not going to say pighead, I'm not going to say, because I'm not trying
the style
to play. I'm not trying to attach a negative connotation to it, but Russ is strong-willed. Russ believes in Russ. I was in Houston one time when he was being interviewed, and they talked to him about D'Antoni. He was like, I'm going to play the way that I play. Okay? You know, when he was in Washington, he said, I'm going to play the way that I play. When he was in Oklahoma City, he said, I'm going to play the way that I play. When he arrived in L.A., he said, I'm going to play the way that I play. And what we all been saying is perimeter shooting is an issue. And over the last 3 or 4 years, you've been shooting in the mid-60s from the free throw line. We're watching teams go against Russell Westbrook and literally back up.
Oh, God.
And say, go ahead and shoot.
Go ahead and shoot.
Now, it's not quite Ben Simmons where you run away and run into the paint and say what we're thinking. But they are backing off of Russell Westbrook, daring him to shoot a perimeter shot. I understand what you're saying about style of play and how this is what it is. But when do you as the player go like this? I really got to get in the gym and work on
I agree with you on this.
I got to work on my J because I got to shoot better.
You follow a lot of basketball. This has always been who Russ is.
Yeah.
So that's why we're talking about
it. Why is it even trying to mesh together with the Lakers? That's why I don't understand.
That's LeBron.
We understand
that's
who
LeBron.
Russ is. This is who he's always been. Now we're all of a sudden going to expect Russ to be somebody different?
Right. But you know what happened, right? They had a chance to get DeMar DeRozan.
Yep.
They had a chance to get Buddy Hield.
Yep.
LeBron, Russell Westbrook goes to LeBron. I want to be here. LeBron signs off on it, gets AD to sign off on it. They get Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka to sign off on it. That's how he ends up in L.A. And what I'm saying is LeBron's a basketball savant. Champion wherever he's going, four-time champion, 10 trips to the NBA Finals. He's a basketball savant.
Mm-hmm.
So you know more basketball than any of us. I wouldn't challenge LeBron James basketball.
Much more on the Lakers later in the show.
Why'd you do it?
That's why I said who's running the organization.
Okay.
Is there one voice?
Okay.
All right. We'll dive into that a little later. Also, the Nets, talk about your boy Kyrie. Jay Will, thank you so much for being with us. Dismissed for now. Mike McCarthy signed a 5-year contract with the Cowboys in 2020 and acknowledged, you guys played so nice today, acknowledged that the 2022 Cowboys will look much different from the 2021 Cowboys. Dallas has gone 11 straight playoff appearances without reaching a conference championship game, the longest drought by any team. Defensive coordinator Dan Quinn and offensive coordinator Kellen Moore will be interviewing for open head coaching jobs. The Cowboys have 21 players, including big names, set to become unrestricted free agents. And the team also has to address a difficult salary cap situation. Here's McCarthy with a shocking admission about his team leading up to Sunday's game against the Niners. Take a listen.
I thought we were nervous to start the game. Felt it in the locker room at the team prayer. Let me take the word nervous back. I mean, it was a little angst, okay? You know, I just think that, you know, it was the first time we were doing this as a whole.
Mike, in your meetings with the Joneses, have they given you clarity on your job security? And amid all the rumors and the gossip, can you share that clarity with us, please?
Yes, I've had a chance to, you know, talk to Jerry, you know, after the game for a long time. Also saw him again Monday, so you know, we had very positive, you know, conversation and just, you know, the focus on the evaluation process.
Okay, my guy Dan Orlovsky back here with us. Don't let Stephen A. hate on you. I like the fit in the hair; it looks fly. But we'll
carry
on. You're welcome.
I'm unaffected by him. I have Teflon for skin. Unaffected.
Yeah, I feel you. Mine's pretty thick myself. McCarthy's comments, let's get into them, about being nervous. Is that more of an indictment of the players or the coaching staff, Dan?
Oh, it's the coaching staff. I mean, Mike McCarthy's a coach who's been a head coach in the NFL for 15 years. 15 years. When I hear a coach say that he feels his players are nervous, it makes me think of two things. They're unprepared and they don't trust themselves and they don't trust the people that they're going to do stuff with. I mean, when you are nervous, it means that you're not prepared for the moment. What are we doing? How confident are we in what we're doing it? That's as a player to a coach, but also players themselves. How confident are we in the things that we're going to go do? Our plan, the way that we've prepared, the way that we've practiced, all that stuff. There's a difference between being nervous and being anxious. Like, being nervous, again, is unprepared. Being nervous is wanting the moment not to come, that you want it to be as far away or as delayed as possible. Being anxious is like, let's go. I can't wait for the moment to get here. And for Mike McCarthy to come out and say that about his football team, or at least that he felt that way about his football team into the game, dude, you're a head coach for 15 years in the NFL. One of the reasons why you were hired was because of the resume, was because of your background, was because that we felt, or the Cowboys felt, that you were a guy that could get this unit to overcome some of the things that a younger coach wouldn't be able to, or a less experienced coach would not be able to. So we're talking about a head coach that, you know, has a track record this season in at least five situations that he mismanaged the clock. Now he's coming out and saying he didn't think his players were prepared and that he felt it in the locker room. I just don't understand how Jerry Jones can sit there, hear those words. Like, you can't take that word back, Mike McCarthy. You know, words are like toothpaste. You can't shove it back into the tube. We heard you say that you felt the team was nervous. That means you didn't do your job in getting them as prepared as possible to go play in a football game.
A couple of things. I think you're wrong on that last part. I think you're being cruel. We get paid to talk on television all the time. I mean, literally professionals. I mean, when we talk about loquaciousness and what have you, just the ability to talk and articulate your points of view and talk, we get paid to do that every day. And sometimes we turn around in mid-sentence, catch ourselves and say, okay, maybe I should say a word differently. So I don't think, I kind of think it's unfair, in all seriousness, Dan, to sit up there and say, when he said nervous, and then he immediately said, let me take that back, and he changed it to angst. I think you could give him a pass on that. I mean, in the moment, it ain't like he came back the next day or two days later.
It's not in the moment, though. I mean, it's
no, 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 no.
The press conference is 3 days after the game.
No, 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 no. The point is, during the press conference, he's asked a question. He gives an answer. He catches himself and corrects himself. In the moment, I think that's forgivable. Now, you come back 2-3 days later like Dak Prescott did, there's some cynicism, some raising of the eyebrows that may come into play because time has passed. But when you're in the moment, you understand what I'm saying? It's not like you're a professional talker. You're a professional football coach. Sometimes you might say the wrong word here or there, and I don't think that's that big of a deal. But I'm going to get to your bigger point. I think you're letting some folks off the hook. The fact of the matter is you're right about the coaches, but it ain't just them. It's the entire franchise. It's Jerry Jones for hiring them. It's Steven and Jerry Jones Jr. for signing off on it. It's the players themselves who were caught up. Because, see, when you in Big D and you win games during the regular season and everybody treats it like it's a Super Bowl title instead of a regular season game, you yourself as players can get caught up. And so all of a sudden throughout the season when you beaten up on the week NFC least, okay? The Washington that don't have a name, all right? The New York Giants that as far as I'm concerned, it is a pathetic franchise right now. And if they smart, they'll hire Lewis Riddick, by the way. That's who should be your damn GM. Pay attention, Mr. Mara, okay? And, of course, the Philadelphia Eagles, who's on the come up but hasn't arrived yet, really. Jalen Hurts got some growing to do and what have you, along with some other people. We'll see where they go from there. That's the NFC least, but against everybody else, you are a below-average team. So you're the Dallas Cowboy players. You get caught up, and you feeling yourself throughout the regular season, and then the moment arrives. Mm-hmm. The playoffs are here. And now all that blustering and bloviating that you were doing, feeling yourself, the moment has arrived to show up and prove and validate you are what you think you are. And they got nervous from that point. Here's what I would tell you about McCarthy that needs to be said. And I hope that Mike McCarthy is watching. Dan Orlovsky is the football aficionado. I am not. I'm just a friendly old reporter that's been covering sports for 28 years, yeah. Okay? Here's the deal, and I'm dead serious about this with Mike McCarthy.
Okay.
This is the one time I sincerely hope he's listening to me. Sir, you don't get it. Yeah, y'all led the league in penalties with 124-27, and then you finished for over 1,100 yards in penalties this year. And yeah, you finished with 141 penalties. And you got to clean that up and what have you. You know what conclusion I came to, Dan Orlovsky? Mike McCarthy still hasn't figured out why he was fired from Green Bay. It's not because of your knowledge of X's and O's. It's because, sir, with all due respect, you have a problem leading men. You have a problem getting the pulse of your team and really getting in them and getting them motivated and hyped about performing, not just their jobs, not just for themselves, but for you. That's the difference. We got too many coaches out here that think because they can go to film or because they can go to the board like Dan Orlovsky and dissect and break down plays that makes you qualified to be a coach. There's a lot of people in football that know football. The difference is, are you a leader of men? Can you galvanize them in such a way that forces them to maximize whatever ability and potential they have? For numerous years in Mike McCarthy's career, even though he's a Super Bowl champion from a decade ago, in numerous years, you have come up short. You did go to 4 other NFC championship games. We know you know football. I have no questions about Mike McCarthy's football knowledge. My problem is, I don't think he has the pulse of his players.
Dan, I want to go back to something that you said because I think it holds a lot of weight in Stephen A. and sort of challenge you. When Dan said that, I thought we were nervous to start the game, right? When Mike McCarthy said that, he said, I thought we were nervous to start the game. I just think it was the first time we were doing this as a whole. And when we look at not knowing the rule at the end of the game, the most penalized team, Stephen A., I think that goes back to what Dan's saying, where they were not prepared.
Yes.
I don't think that he was misspeaking there, whether you're saying anxiety or whatever word he's using. I think he was saying
They were clearly ill-prepared for that last play.
But
I'm not challenging that.
That's
what
the game.
What I'm challenging is that him correcting himself from saying nervous to angst within the same sentence.
But forget that. Take that out of it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not disagreeing with the other
part. But I'm just thinking about what he said.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with it.
But then that puts the onus on the coaches.
Exactly.
Like Molly is saying, whatever way you want to categorize it, angst or nervous,
yep.
When it comes to sports, there's a difference between being nervous or angst and being anxious. And what happens is when you are a person who's nervous for the event, when it comes to sports, it means you're not ready for the moment. It means that you are not prepared. It means as a player that you're not trusting whatever led up until that point. The preparation that happened through the week, you don't trust yourself. You don't trust the people that are around you. So for the coach to come out, who's completely responsible for getting his football team ready for the moment. And here's my thing, Stephen A., when he says, well, it's the first time we're doing it as a whole. It's the first time the Cincinnati Bengals are doing it.
Exactly. And again, Stephen A., it's 3 days later, so he had time to think about what he's, what his messaging is going
to
be.
And you had to anticipate you're going to get that question. Yeah, you're going to get asked by somebody, why did you guys – I mean, this is a team that had – yes.
My point is this. You go on TV every single week and dissect the positives and negatives about teams. Every single week you can point to a coach that might have missed something. Mike McCarthy clearly missed a few things this past Sunday. No one is disputing that. The bigger issue, however, is that this guy doesn't have the pulse of his team. And he hasn't for years. In Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers as his coach, particularly the last 2 years, even though Aaron Rodgers wasn't 100% healthy, and certainly now with the Cowboys.
Forget the pulse. It's about preparation.
Correct. Yeah. And Stephen A.,
I'm just saying we can say that about a lot of coaches. Dan officially has said about a lot of coaches.
Not a lot of coaches that – Stephen A., I'll agree with your final point of the leadership of men, but you can't say that about a lot of coaches that, one, were hired after you fired a coach that wasn't good enough anymore, that you hired a coach to take your team to the next level, and two, guys in the playoffs. We're not saying that about a lot of teams in the playoffs, that they weren't ready, even though they were first time together
plays,
and all that
Dan.
Stuff. This what?
You got Dan Quinn running the defense. You got Kellen Moore running the offense. He's a figurehead, for crying out loud. We've looked at him that way. We've wondered publicly, what the hell does Mike McCarthy do?
But here's what I'm struggling to understand your point, Stephen A. You seem to just brush it under the rug that, yes, he was off a little bit this weekend, and it doesn't matter. It was one and done. We can't say and go after Cliff Kingsbury a little bit for the way that his football team played and say, well, you weren't ready for it and you looked overwhelmed, and then just say, well, Mike McCarthy, he was off a little bit. We can't do that. That's not being fair both to Cliff Kingsbury.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right, we'll move on here, guys, but great conversation. You know, Dan, I told you Matthew Stafford was going to get the job done. When will you finally listen? The LA Rams, in hopes of continuing his pursuit to his first ever Super Bowl, to face the Bucks, where Tom will be looking for his unprecedented eighth ring. The Rams are 2-0 against the Bucks since Brady joined the team, taking his talents to Florida. In those two matchups, he has 3 touchdown passes, 2 interceptions, and was sacked 4 times. Meanwhile, the Buccaneers also play an aggressive style of defense under Todd Bowles, blitzing about 41% of the time. They set an extra rusher 45 more times than any other team in the NFL. However, Stafford is the best player in the NFL against the blitz this season. This is going to be a fun matchup for sure. Here's Sean McVay.
I think it's tremendous respect, but not fear. As a competitor, you know, he is a great, phenomenal player. We have tremendous respect for him, but we're going to have the expectation and anticipation that we're preparing to try to go win this game. And so we know what a great challenge it's going to be. We've got to have a great week of work and then go play to the best of our ability and let the chips fall where they may.
Interesting note there. McVay does not fear Brady, yet he respects him. So who has the edge in this game, the Rams or the Bucks, Stephen A.?
To me, it's the Bucks. I'm not sold on the Rams as of yet. I know they have talent. I believe in Jalen Ramsey. I believe in Aaron Donald. I see Von Miller's getting his sacks. That's a beautiful thing to see. We can't underestimate that. We all know that Tom Brady, for the most part, is a stationary target, but we also know he's a savant. He's absolutely brilliant, and he knows how to pick defenses apart. We'll see what happens there. I don't like the fact that Antonio Brown and Chris Godwin are gone, but you got Gronk. You got Cameron Brate. You've got, Mike Evans as well. And when you look at it from that perspective, and you look at a guy like Giovanni Bernard, for example, that can run the football, when you look at Keyshawn Vaughn, who can run the football a little bit, I don't know when Leonard Fournette would be back. Who knows? But at the end of the day, that experience, the way the Tampa Bay defense played for those first 3 quarters, and the way we see Matthew Stafford, because as Dan Orlovsky said, he has such a profound belief in himself, his willingness to roll the dice and take chances. Sometimes you can beat yourself. So when I look at the Rams versus the Bucks, I not only take all of those things into consideration, Dan, what I come to is this. Who's the dude who can remain most disciplined and not beat themselves by being a bit risque and taking unnecessary chances? Who could shoot themselves in the foot, figuratively speaking?
Yeah.
That would happen to be Matthew Stafford. And that's why I think that when you talk about going up against Tom Brady in a playoff game, I would roll with Tom Brady for this one.
Yeah, so I think the Rams have a distinct edge in this football game. I think your point at the end when it comes to Matthew Stafford and Tom Brady is 100% fair, obviously. I think the Rams have an edge mainly because of health. I mean, this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team has been dealing with injuries all season long. And the fact that we you know, Chris Godwin not there, AB, Tristan Wirfs, like I feel if Tristan Wirfs doesn't play this football game could get ugly. Candidly, if you go back to when these two teams met, I think week four or week five, this was the most pressure that Tom Brady was under all season long. That was with Tristan Wirfs and without Von Miller for the Los Angeles Rams. So we're talking about the addition of an elite pass rusher who's playing really good football and then one of the best right tackles in all of football. That is a massive switch right there. I think for the Rams defense, you know, when you're playing against Tom and understanding that at least three offensive starters are going to be missing from this football team in comparison to when they first played, and potentially not Leonard Fournette, that is a huge advantage for this defense. A huge advantage that can sit there and say, well, we've got Jalen Ramsey that can slow down Mike Evans and Gronk, maybe a little bit of both, either or. And now we've got this elite pass rush unit that can absolutely get after Tom Brady. And I can promise everybody at home, Tom Brady is not going to lose this game because he's going to take sacks. Tom Brady's never lost games because he takes sacks. This game is going to come down to, if Tristan Wirfs doesn't play, how well the Rams defense tackles when the ball is getting out of Brady's hands. Now, when it goes to the other side of the football and the Buccaneers defense versus the Rams offense, I'll tell you this, the game that we just saw on Monday night in the wild card round, that's the best game I've seen Matthew Stafford play in 5 years, maybe longer. There was not a single snap where he put the ball in a careless fashion. If that happens again, and I'm banking on it does, and I'm expecting that it does, if that happens again, the Rams are going to win this football game comfortably, specifically if Tristan Wirfs does not play. I'm that confident in this team. They've got a very good plan for how they want to attack Tampa Bay. Molly pointed out the pressure defensively. If you go back, because you mentioned the first three quarters against Philly, Stephen A., like you go back and watch that game, there's throws there. Jalen Hurts just didn't have them. He just didn't make them.
He just didn't make them.
I promise you, number nine will make those.
Well, let me say this to you. I totally forgot about Tristan Wirfs because I was watching that Eagles-Bucks game, and I remember when he hurt his ankle, he came back in. I don't know why he even tried to come back in, to be honest with you.
Sure.
Because he got ran right over because, I mean, he was just too hurt. And I would tell you that if we look at the history of Tom Brady, particularly in Super Bowls, the last good moments the New York Giants have had, why'd you win those Super Bowls over the New England
Patriots?
Why you win those Super Bowls over the New England Patriots? Because you had pressure and you were able to apply pressure. And even though we rave about the New Orleans Saints defense, particularly when it plays against Tom Brady, although you've got cats like Lattimore and others in your secondary, why were you able to really, really run roughshod over Tom Brady in the regular season? Because of your front four. And so when you look at it from that perspective, and I'm thinking about the Rams, if you have an ability to get to Tom Brady, particularly because he's compromised by Wirfs' injury at that right tackle spot, that could spell doom for Brady. I will admit that, because that not only compromises your pass protection, it also compromises the effectiveness of your running game
and
as well.
Is amazing. Yeah.
That could be a problem.
Looks like you're both leaning towards the Rams. One last thing I'll say, Dan, to your point, when Matthew Stafford takes care of the football, when he doesn't throw a pick, this team's 7-0 this season. So obviously that'll be critical.
Molly. I like that, Molly.
I'm trying to keep up with you, UConn.
He's emotional.
UConn,
he's rooting. He's rooting on Stafford.
Okay.
I don't shy away from it, Stephen A. I don't shy away from it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's keep it rolling here, fellas.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5X miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Well, if you like The Godfather like me, you know they say revenge is a dish best served cold, but I prefer Frank Sinatra's take. The best revenge is massive success, like confetti falling, hoisting a Lombardi in a big diamond-studded ring. Well, that's what Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills are gunning for. But first, they need to get past Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. The Bills are heading to Arrowhead Stadium again, and this time they hope to return the favor after losing the 2020 AFC Championship game. Despite that, Josh Allen has tremendous respect for his opponent.
They are the mecca of what the AFC, or of the AFC, and that's the team that everybody wants to aspire to be. To be in three AFC championships in a row and be in two Super Bowls in a row. So that's the type of level that we want to be. And in order to be the best, you got to beat the best. And they've really been, you know, one of the, if not the best team in the last 4 years. And, you know, again, we've got a good opportunity here, and we're excited for it.
Dan, I cannot wait for this game. To be the best, you got to beat the best. So tell me this, what would a win Sunday over Mahomes mean for Josh Allen?
Going into next year, he's the guy to beat. In the AFC, that you got to go through Josh Allen, that he would sit at the top of the throne, and that you got to go through Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills to get to the Super Bowl out of the AFC. He would be the guy to beat. Now, I'm not saying that I think he's a better quarterback than Patrick Mahomes. I think that's a conversation. But Josh Allen would be the guy that you got to go chase down. The way that he beat you guys down in week three or week four, and then if he takes you down in the playoffs, then Josh Allen's the guy to go get. Think about this football team right now, Molly, just with Josh Allen at the quarterback. In the last 2 years, they're the second best offense in all of football. They're only behind the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They just put a 50 burger on the number one defense in football in New England. Easily. Like, easily. This wasn't a four-quarter game that was 50-44. They could have scored 65 if they wanted to. Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills in the last two seasons have scored 125 touchdowns. Josh Allen is responsible for 100 of them, either throwing or running. That's 80% of their offense. He has become one of the most unstoppable players in all of football. And if they go down to Kansas City this weekend and they beat Kansas City, now we all point and say, Josh Allen is the guy that you have to go beat if you are in the NAFC to get back to the Super Bowl. He's earned that. Patrick was that for a couple years. And if he wins this weekend, he continues to sit on the top of the throne. But if Josh Allen goes down there and leads the Bills there against the Chiefs and they win, then Josh Allen's the guy to beat for the AFC.
Well, how do we know that definitively? I mean, the fact of the matter is that Josh Allen has already lost to Patrick Mahomes. He lost to Patrick Mahomes in the AFC Championship game last year. So if he gets the better of him this year, all right, okay, now we got a rivalry that's going on. But I don't know if it definitively is defined as, you know, you're the guy to beat. I think to me, when I think about the possibility of Josh Allen beating Patrick Mahomes, well, what does it mean? I'll tell you what it means. It means he's going to the Super Bowl. Because I think the winner of this game is representing the AFC in the Super Bowl. That's what I think. I think that Tennessee or Cincinnati falls to the winner of this game. That's just how I view it. I'm not saying Tennessee will be an easy out. And Cincinnati, obviously, with Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase, stud as well. We can't ignore any of them, all right? But in the end, I think the winner of this game represents the AFC in the Super Bowl at SoFi. That's what I think. We willing to peel that from there. But then we got to see how they perform. And that's what I'm looking at it as that. So Patrick Mahomes, we think Patrick Mahomes is a stud, and we should, because he won a Super Bowl championship. He won a league MVP, okay? Not only did he do both of those things, he went to back-to-back Super Bowls as well. That's how we're looking at him. And he's and obviously, even though every playoff game was at home, he hasn't lost it. He lost the Super Bowl, but he hasn't lost in the playoffs. So I just look at them other than, yeah, they did lose to Tom Brady. I apologize. No. They lost to Tom Brady 3 years ago. I'm just saying, Josh Allen to me, it would mean, yo, you've arrived. Y'all going to the Super Bowl. We'll see what you do. I don't know if that elevates him against Patrick Mahomes and makes him the quarterback to beat instead of Patrick Mahomes.
Okay, so a couple things. I literally just told you that they're the second best offense in football outside the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he's accounted for more touchdowns for his football team than anybody over the last 2 years.
Why are you looking up, Elvis? Why are you looking up?
I'm going to get you. Don't worry.
I'm just wondering.
This is bedhead.
No, I was just saying you were looking up. I mean,
here's my thing.
He's looking at the video. Let him live.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just recounting the multiple points I made against you that you ignored conveniently.
I do tend to do that.
So this past offseason, the whole question was, who is the best team or who is the likeliest team to knock off the Kansas City Chiefs? And a lot of us said, well, the Buffalo Bills or maybe the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
If Josh Allen, for the second time in a row, goes and beats the Kansas City Chiefs, then he would be the team to beat. And we will go into next season saying, who is best equipped to most likely knock off the Buffalo Bills to get back to the Super Bowl? And we'll say the Kansas City Chiefs. But if Josh Allen does it, Stephen A., it's not just whether going to the Super Bowl. He becomes the quarterback to beat in the AFC. I loved Peyton Manning growing up. And I loved Tom Brady growing up. They were my two favorite quarterbacks when I was in my teen years. But it was always, as much as I loved Peyton, and as much as I thought he was incredible, you got to go beat Tom Brady. Whether I think you're a better quarterback or not, you got to go beat Tom Brady. That becomes the conversation here if Josh Allen does it again.
Okay. What I'm saying to you is this. When we talked about Buffalo, if you remember, we talked about their defense. We talked about how big time that defense was.
Mm-hmm.
See, what to me, it's not just about the outcome. It's how you perform. I've seen it. Like, for example, let's say, for example, that Buffalo goes in the Kansas City. Now, I don't anticipate this happening. You don't anticipate this happening. But what if Buffalo goes into Kansas City and neither offense can do anything, but Buffalo's defense all of a sudden raises its game and completely neutralizes Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, and Josh Allen resembles Jimmy G and you from the playoffs with the Super Bowl year where he had to do anything but hand the damn ball off, and San Francisco's defense took him to the Super Bowl. What I'm saying is how you perform matters. If Josh Allen performs big time and that's the reason Buffalo wins, you got a point. If Josh Allen doesn't perform big time, well, then that's a different narrative. And I think we got to pay attention to that because we already know what Patrick Mahomes can do. We think we know what Josh Allen can do. We believe in him. But in the same breath, the resume doesn't quite compare to Patrick Mahomes just yet.
Well, the resume when it comes to postseason success,
yes,
I'll give you that.
That's what I'm talking about. We're talking about the postseason.
But he's only had the singular opportunity. That's granted, Patrick performed better last postseason versus Josh Allen than Josh Allen did versus Patrick. Okay. But if the Buffalo Bills defense comes up, it comes and plays well, that's not going to come out of nowhere. It's the top two defense in the NFL. So I think your point is it's fine. But at the end of the day, Stephen A., bottom line is this. Whether it's a dominant offensive performance or an average offensive performance, this game is more than likely going to come down to what quarterback makes a little bit more plays. Whether it's throwing the football run, go back to when they played week four, like Kansas City could not do anything offensively outside of Patrick's legs. So if Patrick has a ton of success running the football again, that's going to be huge. I'm just telling you this. If I have to, I'm going to come on television at some point in April or May after the playoffs happen. And if Buffalo goes down to Kansas City and beats this game, I'm going to be asked, or beats the Chiefs, going to be asked, Dan, who's best equipped to go knock off Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills? And I'm going to say Patrick Mahomes. And that's the way that the question should be phrased. If Buffalo goes down there and wins.
The narrative will change. No, I hear what you're saying. I need a yes or no answer here because we're up against it. But tell me this. Do you think this game is going to be close?
If the Kansas City Chiefs have some slow play like they do, I do not think this game's close. I think Buffalo wins.
Interesting.
It's going to be close.
Interesting.
The Pittsburgh Steelers game was nothing with 6 minutes to go in the second quarter last week.
Yeah. That's right.
They went the whole second half against Cincinnati and scored 3 points. Yeah. They barely had success against Denver. There's moments where Kansas City's offense goes quiet. That cannot happen this weekend.
Stephen A., you heard Dan. Your point was fine. It's just fine.
I'll take that from him.
Come back here on Thursday.
I know he wants to give
Set your game up next time.
But he's contaminated by you.
He said it's fine. I mean, it's fine. That's good. Average.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
NBA, let's go. It's Quick Take. Stephen A. The Nets beat the Wizards in controversial fashion last night when Nets assistant David Vanderpool deflected a pass during the fourth quarter with his team leading 109-103. At the time, the interference got a turnover on the play, and the Nets ended up winning by 1 point. After the game, Wizards acting head coach Joseph Blair said he was in utter disbelief. The refs missed that call. Meanwhile, Kyrie Irving dropped 30 points in 38 minutes in the win and said he's embracing the pressure that comes during Kevin Durant's absence.
I love pressure. I think it brings out the best in me personally. And then also I'm able to carry that energy with the team, whether it be communicating with guys in short conversations on the floor or off the floor.
Big-time players make big-time plays and big-time moments, Stephen A. Can the Nets count on part-time Kyrie?
No, they cannot. You can count on Kyrie Irving on the court to be his spectacular self. Mm-hmm. As I've stated on several occasions, and I'll reiterate this again, Kyrie Irving is a superstar, one of the most gifted guards we have ever seen in the history of basketball. I believe he's worth, in today's NBA economy, he is worth $50 million a year. Easy. He's that spectacular, and I think he's box office, and you should walk through the turnstiles to see him. I would never give him a long-term deal again in his career, because you cannot trust him to show up to work. That is the issue. Kyrie Irving, when he show up, literally this is how you have to treat Kyrie Irving. When we talk about directly in response to your question about trust, and can you depend on Kyrie Irving? You know when you can depend on Kyrie Irving? When you look at the load and dock area and you see the bus pull up and you see him get off of it. Because it's suspense whether he's going to be on the bus. You just don't know. He might show up on the bus. He might not. He might be sick. He might be injured. He might be emotionally preoccupied. Something else is on his mind. Basketball's not that important. Forget the fans walking through the turnstiles that pay their hard-earned money that want entertainment, and they see you. I'm not just an entertainer. I'm not just a basketball player. I'm so much more than that. You know, you peons, you just don't get that. You know what I'm saying? So these are all words that have come out of his mouth, mind you. These are all words that have come out of his mouth. And I'm not going to let go. I understand in the aftermath of the George Floyd killing, the murder of George Floyd and whatever, I understand all of that. We were all a part of it. Tens or hundreds of millions of people were going through the same thing. They showed up to work. Kyrie Irving didn't. Kyrie Irving needed a break. Before that, Kyrie Irving didn't want dudes to play in the bubble. Didn't want them to play in the bubble. After 10 months off, 10 months, he comes back, season starts on December 22nd, after the bubble, 2 weeks in. I'm emotionally preoccupied. I need a break. Just disappeared. Nimmon didn't care that everybody else was there and that people spent their hard-earned money to come and see his greatness. He doesn't care. He cares about what he cares about. And it ebbs and flows. Some days he's cool. Some days he's not. So the point is, the operative word there is depend. I depend. You can depend on Kyrie Irving when you see that brother get off the bus or out of his car and he shows up and puts on the uniform. You can depend on Kyrie Irving. But before then, you got to look at that bus. Is he on it? Is he going to get off of it? I mean, is he going to play? That's the issue with Kyrie Irving, and that's why you have to take it on a case-by-case, day-to-day basis. The brother is spectacular. He's a superstar. He is not reliable. You can't trust him to show up to work because some days he believes that work is beneath him. That's just a fact, and he has said so. And
we'll leave it there.
And I'll leave it at that.
Last night, he did put in work, though. And the Nets are third in the East behind the Young Bulls and the East.
And I knew he was going to put in that work the second I saw him get off the bus. Okay. I saw him get off the bus. I said, oh, he's going to put work in against the Wizards. He got off the bus. He showed up to work.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Let's go to Bob.
Congratulations.